720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this lovely evening. That's a good one. Who does not hear that song and think of Pee Wee Herman? He claimed that song forever.
Think of the Sandlot where they're throwing up on the merry-go-round.
Yeah. Also that. Okay, I think of Pee Wee Herman. You think of that. All right, fair enough. My friends, we have a very special guest in the studio with us right now. We're joined by author Renee Rosen, our good, good friend Renee Rosen. She's written many wonderful books that I'm sure you have read and know all about and love. And her book just came out on Tuesday. This is book four. Book four just came out on Tuesday. It is called White Collar Girl. And it is so exciting to me to talk about it in this building because it is set partially in this building. Is that right?
That is, yes. The book is White Collar Girl. And it is set against the backdrop of the Chicago Tribune in the 1950s, and the elevator pitch would sort of be Mad Men meets House of Cards.
Oh, boy.
This is a young, ambitious female reporter, comes from a family of esteemed journalists. Her father was a war correspondent, her brother was a journalist, mother was a poet, and then also a journalist. And she really wants to cover hard news. But because she's a female and because it's the 1950s, she gets relegated to society news until she establishes a secret source inside the Daily Machine.
Mm.
So it involves lots of scandals that came straight out of the headlines from that era, and it's fun.
Excellent. And so what gave you the inspiration for this idea, this book?
My books have all been historical fiction set in Chicago, whether it was Prohibition or Marshall Field in the Gilded Age. So I knew I wanted to stay in Chicago. And I was thinking, what are the iconic figures and aspects of Chicago? And, of course, the Tribune. And then that sort of rolled into Daily. And, you know, when I start writing, I rarely know where I'm going. So the story just started to take on a life of its own.
That's very exciting. And I you do such a great job with the getting all the details right to really set that stage. The book right before, Dollface, that was set in the 20s, I don't remember the exact year, that had such great detail in it that you really felt very much just there and in that era and kind of imagining all the scenes so wonderfully. And so White Collar Girl, very exciting that it's, I mean, of course, that's after my own heart because it's all about journalism. Yeah. But what are the big stories that this character covers in the book that are kind of the heart-stopping things and the things that really get her going and covering this hard news?
Well, I think some of the stories that some people may remember was there was a huge horse meat scandal in Chicago and actually throughout the state. And it was from like 51 to 53. And it was where horse meat was literally being passed on to the consumer as beef. It was turning up in school lunches. It was turning up in the grocery store and fine restaurants. And it ultimately led all the way to the governor's office, and it was tied to the mob. So that is one scandal that gets explored. Then one of my personal favorites was the Somerdale scandal. And this was featuring the babbling burglar. And there was a guy, Robert Morrison, who was arrested for burglary. And he's in his jail cell, and he just starts talking, and he's babbling. And he says, you know, yeah, I did it, but I didn't do it alone. I had the help of the Somerdale police force. And basically what they did was they teamed up with him, and they would be patrolling the area, acting as if they were protecting the residents there while they're just on the lookout while he's clearing out homes and stores. And when they had big ticket items like, you know, appliances, they just brought the paddy wagon. So
that's so Chicago.
Only in Chicago, exactly.
So Chicago. I'm so fascinated by the idea of. I mean, it's so fun to think of writing historical fiction, but then set in a newspaper and in a newsroom because you have that detail to get so perfectly right. Right? You have, and you even have those stories to go back to think of the exact date where that happened, and that's so interesting and kind of a meta, super meta layer within the story.
And it was, you know, when you're writing about the Gilded Age, nobody was around for that. The 20s, you know, nobody. But this is the 50s. People, you know, there are a lot of people that remember that time period. They remember these events. So, you know, that was an added challenge, try and get it right. Plus, I had no background in news. I'm not a journalist. I'd never stepped foot inside a newsroom. So, you know, that presented other challenges, and, you know, how was I going to get that right?
Mm-hmm. And so how did you get it right?
Well, a mutual friend, I believe you know Charles Osgood?
I do.
Okay, so Osgood and I are having breakfast one day. This was about a year and a half ago. He said, how's the new book coming? And I'm like, I just said, oh, my God, I'm so in over my head. He said, well, what are you doing tonight? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, there's a reunion party for Tribune reporters from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Do you want to come? And I thought about it, and I said, yeah.
Yeah.
So I literally crashed a Tribune reunion party. And believe me, not everyone was happy to see me there. But I, through Osgood, I met Marion Priscelli, who started at the Tribune in 1949 as a copy boy and worked her way up to editor. And she sort of took me under her wings and, you know, really gave me a real feel for what it was like for women back then. And that ended up, I shaped two characters based on her. Jordan, I went back and sort of reshaped her, and then another character, her mentor.
And what was eye-opening about what you learned from her?
Just how really hard it was, how tough they had to be, and that it didn't happen overnight. That, you know, you could not just, for a woman to go in, she was not going to start covering hard news. She was going to have to pay her dues, and that she was going to be marginalized in a lot of ways. And, you know, I had just a very clean cut, like, you know, here she is, she gets her first job, and she starts covering news. And she said, no, it didn't happen that way.
Right. No. Yeah, a lot more to it.
Yeah.
A lot more going on there, for sure. My friends, we're talking with author Renee Rosen. We are talking about her fourth book that just came out this week. Very exciting, because so much of it takes place in this very building, Tribune Tower, that we are sitting in right now talking about it. So many layers of meta right there. The book is called White Collar Girl. You can find that in any independent bookstore. We like to support our independent bookstores. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we are talking more about this story, this wonderful historic fiction set in the 1950s in Tribune Tower. Back in just a bit, 720 WGN. I just talked over that man. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this lovely evening. My friends, we're chatting with Renee Rosen. You can find out all about her at reneerosen.com. That's Renee with two E's at the end, reneerosen.com. She's the author of four books. Her most recent one just came out this past Tuesday, and I'm so excited to be talking with her about it here in Tribune Tower, because it is set in Tribune Tower in the 1950s. It is all about a woman working, this journalist working, trying to get on the hard news stories that not a lot of women were getting at the time. So it's a very glass ceiling shattering sort of book.
And
So tell us a little bit about, you know, I love the all the historical fiction you write. I know you do such painstaking research, but tell us a little about what that was for Tribune Tower and just kind of what you learned about this building.
Well, before I get to that, can I just share one quick story with you? So the book opens where the main character, Jordan Walsh, is in the Hall of Inscriptions in the lobby of the Tribune, and she's looking at all these wonderful quotes, and she's looking at the quote from Voltaire, and that says, I do not approve of what you say, but I will defend
your right to say.
Yeah. And so the book is getting ready to go to press, and I get an email on a Saturday from my editor saying, fact checker went through this, and that was not Voltaire. It's not, it should not be attributed to Voltaire. It's Evelyn Beatrice Hall. And I'm certain that it's Voltaire, because I've been to the Tribune Tower, and this is festering all day long, and I'm Googling, and I'm trying to find out, you know, get to the bottom of it. And finally, at the convenient hour of midnight, very appropriate that we're back here now, I snap, and I'm like, I got to go down to the Tribune Tower and see it for myself. And of course, the Voltaire quote is down the elevator.
It's not right in the main lobby.
And it was roped off, and there was a slight altercation with the guard. But it at Tribune Tower, it is attributed to Voltaire. So that
it is
makes
indeed
it right in the book. And so, but that was kind of one of those, just, you know, heart-stopping moments.
You're like, I'm not gonna relent on this fight. I know what it says.
Well, I thought I was going crazy. But, you know, this building, there's so much history in this building, and it's changed so much through the years.
Indeed.
you know, the city room up on the fourth floor, for those who remember what a manual typewriter sounded like, if you can imagine all those typewriters going, and the phones and the news wires, the wire machines. I mean, it was just so noisy, and the copy boys going up and down the aisles collecting copy. It's amazing to me that people were actually able to focus and concentrate. And then, you know, the composing room that was, oh, plus when the presses started running in the basement, the whole building would vibrate.
Well, here's a fun piece of trivia. I love this building so much, and I love showing people around this building. That's one of my favorite things. A thing that I have learned, there is on the seventh floor where the WGN Radio offices are, there is an auditorium room that used to be where WGN TV did some filming. But now it's just a big meeting space. But because when the press is fired up at night in the basement, it's no longer printed here. It's over at Halstead in Chicago at the Freedom Center, which is an employee-named building. There was a contest of who would name that, and Freedom Center won. But the building would start to shake with all these presses and so many people down there, you know, rolling these big rolls of paper off of, you know, freight cars and rolling them onto the presses. The building shook so much that it was almost impossible to focus a TV camera. And so that room was taken apart, and a hydraulic floor was put in with springs and gaskets and all these things. And then the building or the room was set back on top of it. So technically, that room is not actually attached to the building. It's just sitting there. Now, these springs and all these things have since settled. And so now it's you wouldn't ever know that walking into that building or into that particular room. But it was a way to counteract
the presses. Yeah. Wow.
So, yes.
I did not know
that. I'm here to help. There's lots of cool little like nooks and crannies and just kind of cool things. One of my favorite spots in this building is there's a place on a couple of different floors where you can see exactly where the main tower meets the, you know, the lower additions, the lower levels of the building. You can see exactly where that hits. And there's one place on the fifth floor where it's not closed over. So you just kind of look up into nothing, but you know that's someone took a part of the facade off and attached all this to it, which is very, very cool.
Well, and speaking of facade, I love the story of the stones on the outside of the building, and that Colonel McCormick had he wanted this grand building, and he certainly got it, but he would send his reporters out and say, bring me back remnants of these, you know, international landmarks. So, you know, I believe we're up to like 149
There's a lot.
Stones
mm-hmm.
now on the outside of the building. And I think it's so ironic that he wanted his reporters to basically vandalize
to make
other
his
landmarks
temple
to
grander.
Make his, you know.
Right. I know. I love that. And I love how when you walk into this building, there's always somebody visiting from one of those locations. They're usually like taking a selfie with that piece of rock sticking out of the building. But it's very cool to have all, you know, these pieces. So on Halloween, there was a little bit of ghost hunting in this tower, which was very exciting. And we were trying to beckon. We were trying to summon the colonel. We didn't have much luck. But there's a video on WGNRadio.com. Hannah Stanley and I were walking around with some ghost hunters looking for the colonel.
The colonel
and people that worked so darn hard. I mean, now everything is so, very much computerized. But working in a press room back in the day was not only a very physical, tough job, but it was also very hot.
Yeah.
Extremely hot there.
The composing room, the fact that every edition was hand set letter by letter, line by line, page by page, and then because the way the plates went into the presses, they had to be proofed upside down and backwards. I do not know how that was even possible.
A special skill is what?
Yeah.
A lot of practice.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was learning the mechanics of it all was really fascinating to me.
And so has writing this and being, doing all this research and immersing yourself in the golden era of newspaper, kind of in a way, has that changed your opinion on the state of newspapers now?
Mm. You know, I wonder if, because news, you know, now is available to us 24/7, and you can get it online, you can get it, you know, on TV. And I wonder, are we more educated now? Are we more informed now because news is all around us? Or are we actually less informed because we're not going as deep and people aren't actually physically picking up a paper and reading? And I go back and forth, and I just don't know.
I do, too. I, for a long time, said, I don't care where people get their news as long as they're getting it. As long as it's being consumed, right. I don't care. Get it on your phone, your tablet, your computer, paper, whatever. But I get, and I anyone who's listened to this show knows I am very pro-technology and use it quite a bit. But I get the Chicago Tribune and the New York Times delivered to my house every day, and I read them and consume them much differently than I read the same things online.
Yeah.
I will read something longer. I'll kind of sit with it. I'll stop things, and think about it.
I think whether it's a book, a magazine, things read differently in print, in hard copy, than they do on screen.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. And I don't know that I thought that even just a year ago, because I flip-flop on that a lot, too. And I think it's... I find, like, in times of breaking news, I'll just go right to Twitter and mm-hmm. say, what's going on?
Absolutely.
Who's tweeted what? And I'll go, okay, well, Chicago Tribune has it, or New York Times, or whoever's got it. But for those long reads, especially, you know, the Sunday papers, when those come, those long reads, that's just a very different way to consume it than we would consume. Even, you know, I really love op-eds, and I love those long editorials. Mm-hmm. And so I don't tend to sit with them. And I think the key component to me is contemplation. I don't parcel through them with contemplation and in the same way that I do online.
Well, online is such an instant gratification, and you just hop around so much, and we get these little bite-sized nuggets of information, and you know, and some people think that you know, entertainment news is news, and that's their you know, extent of it. So I just don't know if we're a better informed mm-hmm.
I think
group or not.
I worry a lot because I've noticed people using, they will say this, did you see that story from the New York Times about X, Y, and Z? People go, yeah, I saw it. They don't mean read it. They mean I saw the headline. That's what people mean. Sometimes they mean
they
read
it. You know
what?
You're absolutely right. I hadn't thought about it like that.
And that kind of worries me because I think sometimes...
it's just moving so fast.
It's moving fast, and it's not all in the headline. Right. And, you know, just recently I had someone on the show talking from the Daily Beast. They had written about this, about how kind of the internet's a little bit broken because we're writing headlines to get people to click on it. And it's not always exactly what it is. Sometimes it's like the juiciest morsel.
Yeah.
And so in that regard, I think if people are just looking at headlines, well, we've got trouble.
Yeah.
We've got trouble. But it's always magical to imagine the heyday of newspapers. And I just imagine, you know, imagine that many long form pieces competing for space. And that's a very different argument that's happening in newsrooms now when it's like, well, that's not going to play well, or that really did well online. We should get that, or let's not do that. It's already old news online. It won't be valid by tomorrow.
Yeah,
it'll be an old story.
It's a different strategy.
It is,
you know, when everybody's got a cell phone with the camera, you know, camera phone, everybody's got access to Twitter and Facebook. News can come from any direction now.
Truly,
you know, before you had your trusted, you know. But we had five papers, I believe, in mm-hmm. the 50s in Chicago. And, you know, that was where you got your source. That was your news. They didn't even trust TV back then. A lot of people considered TV to be a fad.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and look at where we are now. You know, we're down to 140 character tweets for. Hey.
Amy, if I could ask a question. I think what you're, and hi from the seventh floor, the mysterious ghost-infested seventh floor. I think what you're just talking about now gives rise, at least in my mind, because I taught this for 20 years in the high school level, gives rise to the question of what is news, and are we, as many people are complaining, are we getting over-newsed? Are we just getting way too much information that in the days when we had five newspapers in town, we wouldn't get all that news? We would just get what someone decided was important enough for our lives.
Yeah.
Well, is it that, or is it that they have to keep you on the line? You know,
That's a good point.
We've all, when there's breaking news, nobody wants to break away. So they will just be reaching and reaching for people to keep interviewing. It's the teacher of the school teacher of the teacher, you know, just to keep us on the line so they can be the first with the next substantial piece of news. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, it happens all too much because we never had news coverage at that level back in the day when there was no cable, there was no satellite. You had to get up to change the channels on your TV.
Well, and everything was, by definition, it was already hyper-local, which has been kind of a bit of a buzzword the last couple of years. People mm-hmm. going, like, returning to, like, DNA info being very hyper-local in the neighborhood level. It was that already. It was about Chicago yeah. or something that was, we need you to know what's happening very, very far away.
Exactly. The world's gotten smaller.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Way smaller.
On that note, we're going to take a quick little break. We'll be right back. We're talking with Renee Rosen about her book set at the Chicago Tribune in the 1950s. And we're talking about how things have just changed so very much in the newspaper world. We're talking all about that. We're taking your calls and text messages, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back in just a bit. 720 WGN.
I'm just a traveler on this earth.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Shane, what's that song?
That's Traveler by Chris Stapleton.
It sure
I like
is.
It.
Badish likes it. He's rocking out up there. Look
yeah.
at You're a dancey guy, Badish. You just kind of rock out.
I love music and I love moving. What can I say?
There you go. Those are the things that you do. Okay. All right, my friends, we are chatting with Renee Rosen, our good friend. Her fourth book is out this week, and it's very exciting. And it's even double exciting because we're talking about it sitting here in the first floor of Tribune Tower, and it's set in Tribune Tower, which is very exciting. It's set in the newsroom in the 1950s. It is called White Collar Girl. Very exciting. I predict this one's going to be a movie, Renee. I predict
from
that.
From your mouth to...
your lips to God's ears, right?
Right?
I predict that one because you do such great historical fiction. You get the details so wonderfully perfect. And the book right before, Dollface, A Novel of the Roaring Twenties, was very fun. I love that era and I love the close of that era. Did you ever watch the TV series... Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. Do you know that one?
No, I've heard of it.
Oh, my God. It sounds like you hear the name and it sounds like it'd be like Miss Marple. No, it is about this feisty feminist flapper woman who is she's a detective and she's solving all these wonderful things. But they tackle these major feminist issues in this show. Oh. While she's in these unbelievably like beaded gowns and these beautiful cloche hats. And it's just so beautiful. I love that era. It's so fun. So
yeah, the 20s is fun.
It is a fun one. But you have other projects. Like, you wasted no time. This book was out Tuesday, my friends, and she's already like, I'm working on another one. Tell me what what the next one is.
The book that I'm working on now, it doesn't have a title yet, but another book set in Chicago, and it's all about the blues and Chess Records. And for people who might not be familiar with Chess Records, they were two brothers who came over from Eastern Europe, and they started a record label, and these are the guys that brought us everyone from Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, Etta James, Chuck Berry, Bo Diddley, on and on. I mean, I always get goosebumps when I talk about it because the foundation of rock and roll started here in Chicago. The Rolling Stones came here to meet their idol, Muddy Waters, And they got their name from a Muddy Waters song. And 2120 down on South Michigan Avenue was where the Chess Record offices were, the studios were, and that used to be called Record Row because there were lots of independent labels down there.
How interesting.
And, there are songs that I could have sworn came out of Motown, and they came out of Chicago. And
that's fascinating. I super love the hidden Chicago things, mm-hmm. like kind of on the north side around North Center area where there was so much happening in the silent film era that you would never know that now.
It was Hollywood on the Lake.
Right.
And, and it's just fascinating to me that all this happened in Chicago. And I'm just having an absolute ball doing the research for this. Have met Willie Dixon's family now has Blues Heaven, which is mm-hmm. down at 2120, and spoke with Willie Dixon's grandson, and met a bunch of blues players. I took a trip down to New Orleans, and then we drove up the blues highway and went to juke joints where people are playing washboards. And, you know.
Oh, my gosh, how cool. That's bucket list material right there.
And so it's really, I'm just having so much fun with it.
And what?
I'm sorry, Amy.
What's that?
There's a Channel 11 special. It's been out for a number of years, and I'm sure you've probably seen it as part of your research, called Record Row.
Yeah.
Great historical documentation of that area.
Yeah, it's amazing. There was like VJ Records was down on Record Row, and I believe they, I might be a little foggy on this, but I believe they had the rights to the first Beatles record.
Yeah, they did.
Wow.
Yeah, they got it with, I'm trying to remember the recording artist who yodeled his songs back in the day, but they got the U.S. rights to that, and with it, because the Beatles were not big anywhere yet, they got the Beatles as like an aside, and they issued a number of Beatles records, the VJ label, and then got into a battle with Capitol, and eventually they lost the rights to that. But those are, I even have a VJ Beatles 45 at home. And those are collector's items.
Yeah, that's
now.
A treasure.
Yeah.
Do our guests not teach us so much, my friends?
This
I
is
mean,
fantastic.
Really, this is so interesting to me. What era is this next book set in?
It starts in Chess Records really began as Aristocrat Records in 1947. So it starts right about then. And it's going to go up to the 60s when the Stones came here.
Oh, my gosh.
So
the book release party for that one is going to be phenomenal.
Well, okay, so I am trying to learn to play the harp, otherwise known as the harmonica. Now,
okay.
I thought this was the throwaway instrument,
no.
You know, like the tambourine. Or
the triangle.
It is really hard. I keep hyperventilating, you know. I play like two chords and I pass out, so... but no, we're going to have an all-out jam session. I mean, bring your kazoo, bring your triangle, whatever you play. And we're going to do Sweet Home Chicago.
Maybe a little bit of cowbell for me. That's all you're going to get for me. I don't. The musical talent skipped me and my family.
Well, me too, but it's not stopping me, so.
There you go. That's a good attitude right there. And so what's the timeline of that one? When can we see that book?
That is slated for February of 2017.
Okay. Excellent. So you get a little time with this one, with White Collar Girl. Enjoy this 50s journalism part and then move into this one. So we're talking with Renee Rosen, and you can read all about her stuff, ReneeRosen.com. That's Renee, two E's at the end. You can read all about all four of her books and the fifth one that she's very excitedly working on right now. And we need to take a little break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about your journey as a writer, because that's something I'm always very interested in talking with writers about, your style, your approach, writing rituals, because everybody's got their kind of quirky thing. So we'll talk about that in just a bit. We'll be right back. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for hanging with us tonight. We've got all kind of creative things cooking in here this evening. And right now is no exception. We've been hanging out with our friend Renee Rosen, talking about her fourth book and even her fifth one that's not even out yet. She wastes no time. The fourth book came out on Tuesday, and she's already talking about the fifth book. She is really, really excited about the work that she does. And I want to talk about that a little bit, because I'm always very interested in how writers approach their work and the paths that we take and all of those things. But first, looks like we have a little comment. Hi there, Susan. You're on WGN.
Well, yes. I just happened to wake up, and I think some of the most interesting shows you have on WGN are in the middle of the night.
Thank you.
Seriously. This to me is fascinating. Sounds like I would like to read every book that Renee Rosen has written, by the way that it's so truthful and so local. And that is what interests me. I absolutely feel that this book, White Collar Girl, has the potential to be a movie. And I like the fact that it's number one, it's truthful, and that it's set in Chicago with real Chicago references to it. And and speaking of newspapers, you were talking about how you get, in my opinion, you got some better quality news back in the day. I was reading Mike Royko. I grew up in the Detroit area. I'm 65. Mm-hmm. I read Mike Royko in high school because he was a syndicated columnist. And I think the level of serious news has been diminished by so much fake and fluffy and diverse. The Kardashians are not news.
No, they're not.
And the stuff that Mike Royko talked about was news. And so sometimes more is not as much. But also about the regarding Chess Records, that also sounds like that is going to be a how do you get the research for all of your work? How do you actually find out about all these things? It must take, because it's real and you have to go to places, do you spend a tremendous amount of time in research, Renee?
You know, I've been on some tight deadlines, so in some cases I've been researching with one hand, writing with the other. In the case of the blues book, just because people really, really know their blues, they know music, I got to get it right. So I've taken a little bit more time to just really focus on the research. And something kind of almost like, ooh, mystical happens when I start to research, because I'll put something out there and I'll just tell people what I'm doing, and then people come to me. Like the way I met Marion Priscelli when I was working on White Collar Girl. I mean, I didn't know where I was going to even start with this book. And all that sort of fell into place. And then I met...
Yeah, the fact that you got invited to that party of all these people that worked there in the 50s, that had to be not just luck.
That was the mother load of research for me. You know, I'd walked into a room with all the people that I'd been writing about, basically.
That is so interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, similar things happened with the blues book where... You know, I'm talking to someone and they said, oh, you know, you have to meet so-and-so. They know the Chesses. So, you know, I've been trying to get in touch with Jamar Chess and Marshall Chess and, you know. So,
and the more you go, then the more you meet so-and-so who knows so-and-so who knows so-and-so.
Yeah.
The source is kind of.
You know, met Jean Barge and some others. So
that's so fun. Susan, thanks so much for your call. So nice to hear from you.
And it sounds like I'd like to. Now, is this book going to be available in bookstores like Barnes & Noble, or is it only like Amazon?
No, everywhere.
You can find her everywhere, Susan. Everywhere.
Okay. I'd like to read everything you ever wrote, Renee.
Oh, thank you.
You totally should. You'll love them.
No, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Have a great night.
Bye-bye.
That was nice.
That was nice.
Well, and so
like Susan.
Right? Susan's your new best friend. So she has endorsed my idea of this being a movie because I think it'd be a fine one. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you're talking about research and the writing and all that. And I am always so interested in your approach because, as you just said, sometimes I'm researching with one hand and writing with the other. What is that process for you a little bit? Kind of take us through that. Is that, do you kind of flesh out a story idea and then go all in on the research, or are you really, really doing them simultaneously?
I am so not an efficient writer. You know, what I do is I have sort of a vague notion of what it's going to be about, because what I'll do with my publishers, I give them, you know, a synopsis basically, and with the understanding that all kinds of surprises are going to happen, because once you get to know your characters, they will take off and they have a destiny to fulfill. And, you know, we just become the facilitators of it. But, you know, when I was writing What the Lady Wants, which was all about Marshall Field, that was the first time I'd ever written under contract. So my first book took 17 years to write. Dollface took 10. Now I had a year to turn in a book. I didn't know if I could do it. I was never more than 3 feet away from my laptop for a year. I mean, I took it to people's dinner parties. It was terrible. But I would keep these, you know, logs, and I had to hit 2,000 words a day, even if that meant foregoing contractions. You know, I had to hit 2,000 words a day. And, sort of finding my way as I go. Like, the first draft is just me telling myself the story. Mm-hmm. And I try not to get too hung up on it. I know it's horrible writing, but I need a beginning, middle, and end, and I need to get to know the characters. And, you know, with each draft, you learn more about them. And I write myself into 20,000 word corners all the time, you know. But it's sort of just, I feel like, I think it was Donna Tartt that said that when you're writing, it's almost like you're a first reader. So I'm, you know, just going on this journey to see what this story is that's come to me.
Mm-hmm. And how do you set those eras? Because you're writing in, you know, your focus is on historical fiction set in Chicago. And is that music? Are you listening to a particular thing while you're writing? Or what do you do to set that era for yourself?
With the blues book, I'm listening. I mean, I've constantly got Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters and Little Walter on. And it could just be seeing a photograph that sort of, you know, triggers it, or hearing a story, or, you know, I spent a lot of time at the History Museum and, you know, just going through something in a train, you know, mm-hmm. and it will seem like the thing that sparked the idea has nothing to do with the final product. But I constantly go to things that are like sepia color, you know, just, or old photographs and music, and you know, it's not even a conscious thing. You know, I gravitate towards it, and then, you know, and we do strategize a little bit, my editor, my agent, and I, about where do we go to from here. You know, we want to do something with Chicago, and we kick around ideas, and you know, I think when we all hit on something that feels right, we know it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And so are you, do you have a lot of rules for yourself while you're writing? You mentioned, you know, 2,000 words a day.
Yeah.
Do you say, okay, I have to write this many words every day? Or do you write a certain time every day?
I've gotten a little bit more comfortable with writing under contract. I mean, I'm telling you, with What the Lady Wants, I was crazed with having to hit this 2,000 words. You know, didn't take vacation, didn't do anything. And, you know, either I'm getting more comfortable with the idea of being on deadline always, there are certain things that I do. You know, I get up in the morning and I have this like way I go through all my social media and all my emails. I start with Goodreads and then I go, I work my way down. So I do that. And then once that's all clear and done, then I start writing, and I'll usually write for about 3 or 4 hours. And then I feel kind of like emptied out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to do something, and it can be as mindless as like folding laundry, but I have to get away from the laptop and just shake it out. Yeah. And then I'll come back and work for a couple more hours.
And, mm-hmm. And so you mentioned that first novel took how long?
17 years.
17 years. What was that process?
Oh, my God. That was, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I hadn't studied. I took some classes with Carol Anshaw, who's a Chicago author, and I did a few workshops, but I really didn't know what I was doing. And so I was, you know, reading and mimicking, but I hadn't found a voice yet. And so it took me a long time to learn how to get, you know, something that felt real and was publishable.
When did you know that it was time to put that book out into the world?
Well, it's actually a bit of a love letter to my father, who had passed away. And I'd been working on it, and after he passed away, I realized how fragile our time is here, and it's like, it's now or never, just do it. So I went back to the book, I dusted it off, and I got really serious, and I was just like a dog with a bone. I was not gonna give up until I saw it in print.
Nice. And then when you first published that first one, there is no feeling like opening a cardboard box in the mail and seeing your book. There it is. And it looks like a foreign thing, like you've imagined it for so long, but there it is finally. How has that been, seeing that book cover each time? How has that changed for you as you're going to book five?
The first book, I was absolutely terrified. I it was such a personal story, and I thought, on what planet did I think this was a good idea to write this? So it was more fear, and I had never done anything public before. But, you know, it does not get old, I got to say, because, you know, when you finally hold your baby, it becomes very real, and it's just, you can't believe that you actually created that, you know? It's like, this I actually get to do this.
Indeed.
So.
Indeed. And we're looking forward to you doing that a lot more. I'm thrilled to talk about your fourth book, and I'm very thrilled to even start imagining your fifth book. That's all very exciting. So the fourth book that just came out on Tuesday, my friends, it is called White Collar Girl. It is from Penguin Random House. You can find it absolutely anywhere, but I urge you to support your local independent bookstores. They struggle, you know, the Amazon. They struggle, so you got to help them. You got to help them. And then the fifth one, look for that one in February 2017. But you know what? Here's my prediction. I'm saying it right here. By the time that book comes out, we will have news about White Collar Girl being a movie. There.
You heard it here.
You heard it here. I'm saying it. It's a thing. There you have it. All right. Renee Rosen, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Before I let you go, where can everybody find you on social media and all that good stuff?
Social media. So Renee Rosen 1 on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. Website, reneerosen.com. And
that's where we find you.
Yeah.
And you know what, my friends, there's info about all the books there on her website. So go there, check it out. Or those books from your independent publishers. Do all those things. Support her. Thanks so much to Susan for the call. And we are going to head to news here just a minute or so early. Roger Badish, will you forgive me?
I will forgive you for anything, anytime, anywhere.
All right, because it's seconds away, but we're okay. Going to do this.
That's right. By the way, it was very interesting, your conversation for the past hour, because I have been asked to write a book about my many experiences.
Oh, Badish, you have got to write a book.
And I've started it 10,000 times, 10,000 different ways over the past year or so, and I don't know what it is, but I've been listening to your trials and tribulations getting your first book done. I'm in the zone, if you know what that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I go for an hour, hour and a half. I'm typing. Then all of a sudden, blank. And I don't come back to it for weeks and weeks on end. And it's just sitting there. And I don't know if I should just focus on my teaching years, if I should focus on different parts of my life that I don't know where to go or what to do.
You know, and you just keep going. Don't overthink it. Just get a beginning, middle, and end down.
Okay.
You heard her. How she said, she even said the words. She used the words.